With us in the studio now is Leslie Cavendish, who became Paul McCartney's private hairdresser in 1966 and soon began to work on the image of all four Beatles. He was invited along as a friend and participant on the Magical Mystery Tour and opened up his own salon backed by Apple and the Beatles on King's Road, Chelsea. He now works for a major charity and conducts occasional VIP Beatles tours of London. His book, The Cutting Edge, which tells his story, is now out in paperback. Welcome to the show, Leslie.
Good afternoon, Hada. Thank you for the invite.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's lovely to meet you. And what an amazing story you have to tell. I bet when you started hairdressing, you started as an apprentice, and I mean, you never thought that your journey would have taken you to there.
No, I started off as a junior, and never thought after washing hair that I would end up. I always thought I'd be cutting famous or infamous ladies' hair.
Yeah.
And then gradually gone on to cutting men's hair. And one of the things that happened, and not many people know this at the time, that men and women didn't go into the same salon. So the women would be downstairs, and I had to cut the hair upstairs. And the first person I cut upstairs, there were two people. One was Ray Connolly, who was a famous...
Yes.
Written loads of books, as you well know.
Yeah.
He worked for the Evening Standard. He did a great write-up. And the other one was Terry Stamp, who is, if anyone doesn't know who Terry is, he was the Brad Pitt of the day, handsome-looking guy. And his brother, Chris, was the manager of The Who.
Okay.
And I came to cut his hair, and he said to me, can one of the guys come on? You know, I need one of the guys to have the hair cut. So I said, okay, and so he sent him in, and it was Keith Moon. So I cut Keith's hair upstairs, and that was the start of it. And then eventually it became unisex, not at Vidal's, but later on, salons opened up where men and women could have the hair done.
So were you starstruck in those early days, you know, when you met Keith Moon and everything? Were you thinking, oh, my goodness, no, never?
No, not starstruck with... I'm a bit more starstruck with the women.
Right, fair enough.
Because you see, what happened is that you'd go in the morning, sometimes as an apprentice, you'd go in at 8:30 in the morning, and you'd see, you'd sort of look at someone and go, I know her, but where? And you'd see her completely with no makeup, her hair all wet, and you realise that it's Dusty Springfield.
Oh, wow.
Or you think it's Shirley Bassey, or Mia Farrow was in there. So, yeah, I used to look there and think, oh, that's what you look like. And then about an hour and a half later, they were the film stars.
Yes.
When it came to the men, I'm a bit of a mental groupie, you know, at the time. I do like music. But I used to sort of talk to them. I mean, Keith Moon, for instance, I could talk to him about football, and he happens to be brought up in Wembley.
Yeah.
So we had something in common there. But I think the first time was when I met Jane Asher. Because you know that who she was going out with. And one of the things that Vidal's, they taught us was always remember that they're a client. Okay,
yeah.
So whatever happens, they're a client. And if they want to speak to you, fine. And don't ask silly questions. So what would be a silly question? How's Paul, Jane?
Yes, you don't
ask that.
Yes. And, where did you meet?
How is he? And, you know,
yeah.
You waited for her, and she never, ever spoke about him.
Okay.
But I used to wash her hair, and she had very long, beautiful strawberry blonde hair. She used to take me 40 minutes to hand dry it. Then I used to pass it over to the stylist, a guy called Roger. He would then, after I'd done all the hard work, he would show her the back mirror, just sort of, I'll use a hairdressing term now, zhuzh it up a bit, and show her the back mirror, and she would say, thank you, Roger. When I became a stylist, I had someone else to wash her hair. Then I started, I still kept hand drying it. And again, she would talk about she was doing a film down in Bristol with Peter O'Toole. And then she was speaking. When it finished, and it was on a Saturday morning, she just said to me, are you doing something in the afternoon? And I quickly sort of, what does she mean by that?
Yeah.
And she came out and she just said, I said, why is that, Jane? She said, have you got time? I love this, my classic. Have you got time to cut my boyfriend's hair? And I said, yes, I think we've got time to cut
my boyfriend's hair. I think I can squeeze it into my schedule.
It was never mentioned Paul.
Right.
And I just said, yeah, loved you. And she said to me, I said, to what time? And she said, what time suits you? Now, I go to football for my sin, as I support Queen's Park Rangers, who happens to be in Shepherd's Bush.
Yeah.
And I worked it out from Shepherd's Bush to St John's Wood, where Paul McCartney lived, which is literally behind Lord's Cricket Ground. I said, 5:30? And she had said, no, I would have just gone straight over. And she said, yeah, that's fine. So went to the football game, never told anybody. And I turn up, and before I did that, I said, Jane, I need to know where you live. And she said to me, oh, pen and paper. And she went, 7 Cavendish Avenue. I said, Jane, that's my surname. And she said, maybe it was meant. So that was my first. I was thinking a little bit, I'm going to meet Paul McCartney. I've got to be honest about it.
Yeah. And then when you did that first time, what was it like?
The first time was strange because I arrived, instead of parking outside his house, I parked a little bit up the road to gather my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw 4 or 5 girls outside his house who eventually, George Harrison wrote a song called The Apple Scruffs. But they were very nice because they knew everybody that went in and out.
Mm.
Paul used to send his housekeeper out and give them some coffee if it was really cold. So I pressed the buzzer and they said to me, who are you? I said, oh, I'm nobody. I'm just going inside. So the buzzer opened and inside I'm going to meet Paul McCartney now. Just controlled. He's there to cut his hair. And I walked in and the first thing I saw on the left-hand side was a green Aston Martin. I thought, oh my God, James Bond and Paul McCartney, Aston Martin. This is when you've really made it.
Yeah.
And I go up the stairs and I thought, right, expecting the housekeeper to open the door. So I pressed the bell and because she already said to me, Mr. McCartney's expecting you.
Mm-hmm.
And I pressed the buzzer outside. So I'm expecting her to open the door, press the bell. Whew. Paul McCartney turns up. Hello. Really natural. I said, hi. I said, James.
He opens his own door.
He opened his own door. And he had the farewell sweater that that he was famous for wearing, this old Argyle farewell sweater. And he said, oh, James told me all about you. Would you like to come in here? Do you want a cup of tea? And he made me feel so natural. This whole aura of I'm a Beatle, I'm Paul McCartney.
Mm.
Just wasn't there. It was very natural. And we actually sat down in his front room with a mad dog running around, which was his English sheepdog called Martha, my dear. And we sat and talked. And then eventually he said, right. And I said to him, right, we've got to do your hair. And I'm not thinking how he wants it done.
Mm.
And when I eventually got to know about Paul and the other guys, that throughout the years, when even when Brian Epstein was their manager, Brian Epstein put them in, he's a very smart guy, Brian Epstein, beautiful suits, his shoes always shining, and he made them an image, which was fine, but they never had a stylist around. They didn't have makeup, not like today.
No.
Not like, they didn't have bodyguards around. They had two guys, Mal Evans and Neil Aspinall, who were their roadies from Liverpool, who acted as their bodyguards, come the guys that put up like a road manager.
Mm.
And that fascinated me because when I went upstairs to Paul, we went to his bedroom, if you could believe it or not. He had an ensuite, which is another thing. I've never seen an ensuite before. And I'm thinking, how am I going to wash his hair? And I pulled a chair from his dressing room, or probably Jane's, sat by the sink, and I actually washed his hair in the sink with a cup. That's Paul McCartney. Yeah, it's amazing. I said to him, how do you want your hair? And he said to me, as you see it.
Which
was a
wow.
great thing to say, because that happened throughout my whole time with him and Lennon and George Harrison, whatever. No one ever said, I want it like this, I want it like that. Do it as you see it.
Amazing.
It's a good thing to see.
Yeah.
So that says that. Yeah.
So at what point, when you talk about this haircut that kind of defined an era, which haircut are we referring to?
So the haircut, the sort of Pudding Bates haircut, the fringe, the mop top, was done originally by Astrid Kircher, which was... if anyone knows their Beatle history, it was a guy called Stuart Sutcliffe. He died at 21, but he was John Lennon's best friend. He was in the Beatles. He used to play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
That was in Germany. And they used to, if anyone knows those pictures from Hamburg, they had greasy hair. They were rockers, leather jackets, leather trousers, long sideburns, a bit like Elvis Presley, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
They went, Paul and John went to Paris, and they met this friend of Astrid's who had this sort of French cut without sort of the brill cream, you know, the greasy look. And so when they came back, she thought it was a good idea, and she made Stuart, her boyfriend, comb his hair forward and said, "Don't you don't need any grease." And that became the cut that you first saw.
Mm.
If you go on and look at Let It Be,
yeah,
that's where I came in, okay? That was a hair, when the hair suddenly grew longer. In fact, in August 1967, was the last time they did a concert in California, Candlestick Park.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is when they unplugged their guitars, took their ties off, and became John, George, Paul and Ringo, which meant that they could be themselves.
Mm.
So I was very lucky. I caught them when they finished and caught them as an identity. So their whole hair became longer and the fashion was becoming longer. And I look at Let It Be album and I think, that's my haircuts. And my grandmother, bless her, at the time when she knew, she was a Russian immigrant. She used to know that I cut the Beatles' hair. And when she used to see them, she said, "Why, you say you cut their hair, they need a haircut."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. So how long were you cutting their hair for?
I cut McCartney's hair in September 1966. I won't forget the date. And I ended up cutting the other Beatles. John Lennon went off to New York in 1970.
Mm.
So in between that, they opened a salon for me. Which I used to cut George Harrison's hair in the salon. Paul McCartney's at home. John Lennon at the Apple offices in Savile Row. And Ringo, because his wife, late wife, Maureen, was a hairdresser, he used to do his hair a lot.
Right.
And I did his hair for a fabulous film called Magic Christian with Raquel Welch and Peter Sellers. So I did that a few times. But that was in 1970. I ended up, when the Beatles broke up, I still got to go around to Cavendish Avenue with Linda McCartney. I used to do her hair a little bit, and then Paul's, and then they moved down to the countryside, and there it was. They all went off in different ways. A lot of time.
And how about your time on the Magical Mystery Tour?
Well, that was a groupie thing. I mean, I got a... I was told, Paul... This was 2 weeks after Brian Epstein died. So when I went round there, I went round there, you know, I thought, this is really sad, you know, the manager died, and what do you say? So then I said, I'm really sorry. And he said, yeah, it's terrible. It was really bad, a big shock to us and everything. By the way, what are you doing next week? And I said, why? I was working at Sassoon's at the time.
Mm.
And I said, well, why is that, Paul? He said, well, what we're doing is we've got this coach, and we're just going to go down to the countryside towards Devon and Cornwall, and I'd like you to be part of the cast, and you could do a hair at the same time. It was okay. And there were 41 people on that coach, including the Beatles, 39. And what it was a mixture of some of the Beatles fan club were invited.
Yeah, oh, how lovely.
It was a lovely thing to do.
Yeah.
Really nice. Some of their friends, and me. it was quite amazing because of what it was actually the very first time I saw the four Beatles together working as a unit.
Right.
Which I've never seen before. I did later on, so I watched the record at the recording studio, so I watched it literally do the music together. But to see them interact, and what has struck me from Paul McCartney, and it's still to this day what people have noticed, but I saw it right from then, that Paul McCartney is the conductor of the Beatles. He was the Beatles. So he would never want the Beatles to... he would have loved the Beatles to go on forever. George was frustrated. He wanted to expand his wings into songs, which he did. Ringo did his own little theme, but I think Ringo would have followed whoever. He would have just got along with it. And John was doing his own thing with Yoko, going to New York, fighting about, you know, the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
Was a very important part of his relationship with Yoko. So that's how the peace thing came in. So, but to see them actually together was quite, and they were actually very funny.
Yeah.
You know, interacting with one another. It's nice. It was nice.
And I'm interested that you never kept any of their hair, because I read that one of John Lennon's locks was recently auctioned for £25,000.
Well, I could have been a multimillionaire.
Yes, yes.
No, as I said, I never told anybody I cut the Beatles' hair, right?
Oh, really? While you were doing it, you didn't?
No, people that find out would be Ray Connolly. He would write about it. Where it came about, I didn't want to do that, because if it got the newspapers, they would start offering you money, and this was a big thing to do, to cut the Beatles' hair. How it came about that I'd be known as their hairdresser is that on the third occasion when I cut Paul's hair, he said to me, I said, Jane, I haven't seen Jane for a while. He said, no, Jane's in Bristol working on a film. And I said, are you going to go down and see her? And he said, I can't, because they only ask me questions about me and the Beatles. So I said, that's a shame. I said, when she finishes, are you going to go on holiday with her? And he said, no problem. And for a joke, I said, why don't you go in disguise? And he said, like what? And I just looked at him, picture a beetle in the mirror, hair pulled back. And I just said, why don't I just cut all your hair off? And he went, okay, do it. So I cut his hair, half an inch long, cut all this beetle lock off, the whole lot. Thought to myself, oh my God, what have you done?
Okay.
Six weeks later, I read in the newspaper, Heathrow, well, it was London Airport at the time, and he came back with Jane Asher, Mal Evans, from Nairobi, been on safari, had a fantastic holiday, and people said, how did you escape? You know, everyone knows Paul McCartney, had a moustache as well, and obviously Mal must have said, well, he's had his hair cut, who cut his hair? Says the Cavendish, and that's how it really became. So once that happened,
so he name dropped you instead of the other way round.
Yeah, well, not him, but someone did, because suddenly the newspapers, I'm getting loads of people saying, "Oh, you cut Paul McCartney's hair short. How did you do it? How did he let you do it?" And then from that, it sort of. But I kept quiet the whole time. I didn't want to tell anybody where they were recording.
Yeah,
I didn't want to ask for the autographs. Mm. I never wanted to keep their hair, because the moment you do that, sort of, as the old Bob Dylan, someone shouted, you've gone, you've sold out, man, you've gone electric. You
know, yeah, no,
I didn't
absolutely
want to do that, because why?
Yeah, you know, would have spoilt your relationship.
Would have spoilt the whole thing.
Yeah.
Catches me catching some hair. What you doing with that, Leslie, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, but good luck to the person who sold it for 25 grand.
Yes.
Should have given me half.
Well, it's an amazing, amazing story. The book is called The Cutting Edge. It's by Leslie Cavendish, who we have with us in the studio. If listeners want to get a copy, it's available on our website, tre.radio. Leslie, thanks so much
for
coming in.
Thank you so much indeed.
It's been so nice to meet you. I bet it was great fun reminiscing and writing the book,
was it?
It
was beautiful. It was lovely. Yeah, I remembered it.
Yeah, you remembered
you remember
what happened.
I remembered it. It was
Brilliant.
A good memory. Thank you,
Do
Hannah.
You think you'll write more?
Yes, I've got another book coming out by Christmas. Very quickly, it's a Beatle guidebook.
Okay.
It's called Across the Universe, There Are Places.
Yeah.
And basically, wherever you are in the world, and wherever the Beatles played, so whether it was Seville, Madrid, America, Europe, you can read about it in the book, little anecdotes, and I'll let you know.
Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, please keep us updated. We'll have to have you again to talk about
it.
That sounds
Appreciate
brilliant.
It.
Leslie, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Hannah.